Morning. This morning's daf in Baba Basra's Chav Ches. We start with a Mishnah, the last two Mishnahs of the second parak of the Masecha found on Chav Zayin Mid Beis. This is the conclusion of Lo Yachbor. Lo Yachbor dealt with issues regarding neighboring properties and basically how to be a good neighbor and how to make sure that you don't harm your other neighbor and how does your neighbor not harm you. And over the course of this parak, we've discussed various halachas regarding walls and proximities and distances. And the Mishnah continues along the same track. Ilan shehu nota l'stei chaver. So let's say my tree now grows into your property. It happens all the time, especially with neighboring properties. So a tree grows into another property. So kotzes malo amardea agabe amachareisha. So you are allowed to cut back on the growth that's growing into property. How much? So the Tanakam of the Mishnah says that you can cut back Malo HaMardeya while standing on top of the Machareisha. Rashi has a great expression to describe the Mardeya. The Mardeya, Rashi says, Malamid Bakar, that which teaches the animal. Basically some sort of goad, some sort of hitting stick. So you are now standing on the Machareisha, on the plow, and you're hitting the animal in order to go. So you're going to be a little bit higher and your arms are going to be raised a little bit. So basically, if you took that scene and freeze frame that scene, so that's how much room you need in order to navigate. So when you have now your neighbor's branches growing into your property, so you can cut back on the branches enough so that you can navigate and you can maneuver while goading your animal while plowing. Basically, to put it simply, you need work room. So you need enough room to work. So that's how much you can brush back in terms of the growth growing into your property. Now, if it's a churv and shikma, which we already identified earlier in this parak, it is just a stronger tree, a lot more branches that are coming down. So for this, you can cut back, and you can basically cut back kenegad mishkalos, basically a plumb line. Meaning, if you were to drop a plumb line into your property, so that line that goes directly upwards, so you can cut back all that. Rashi explains why. So Rashi says, because since their growth really creates a canopy, so therefore you want to be able to cut back so much so that it no longer produces any shade for your property. The shade from these trees that go into your property are going to result in inferior growth. So therefore you can cut back all the way to basically the plumb line that runs along the two properties. Beis HaShlachim, kol ha'ilan kenegad mishkalos. If you have a Beis HaShlachim, if you have a field that requires irrigation, so again, a very delicate field, a field that really needs proper sun. So once again, regardless of what tree it is, so you can cut back the growth all the way back to that plumb line. Abishal Omer, kol ilan tzrak and get a mishkalos. And Abishal is of the opinion that when you have ilan tzrak, when you have a tree that is not producing fruit, so you can always go back to the plumb line. So the Gemara's question over here is a very simple one. Abishal over here is commenting on which part of the Mishnah. Ibailu. Abishal Reishakai. Is Abishal going on the first part of the Mishnah? Of the Mishnah, and as Rashi explains, that which the Tanna Kamma says that you can only do a clearing so that you have room to work. So does Abishal saying on that? That if it's an Ilan Srak, you can go back all the way to the plumb line. Or is Abishal going on the second half of the Mishnah, which is that which the second part of the Mishnah says that you can go back to the plumb line and you can only go back to the plumb line. Is Abishal saying no? Only if it's an Ilan Srak, only if it's a non-fruit producing tree. Or effectively, if we could just put the question in another term, is Abishal coming to be more Mako, or is he coming to be more Machmer? So Tashma, the Gemara says, okay, from the Mishnah, it's not perfectly clear, but from the Braisa, it will be clear. Ditanya will enter the Braisa, Beis HaShlachim. If you have a field that requires irrigation, Abishal Omer Kol Ha'ilan Kenegad Mishkalos Mimnei Shatzel Ra LeBeis HaShlachim. So you can take every tree, look at the Braisa, look at the wording of the Braisa, Kol Ha'ilan, you can take every tree and brush it back and chop it back all the way back to the plumb line, because any shade would be bad for the Beis HaShlachim. So Shmamina Reisha Kai, Shmamina. So you see that Abishal is going back on the Reisha, meaning he's being more Mekel, meaning that the any time that you have Beis HaShlachim, he's being
everything is going on the Beis HaShlachim.
Yeah, because he can cut it.
No, as long as it's an Ilan Srak, as long as it's a non-fruit producing tree, you can go back.
Yeah, but the Telekamer says only by Chover B'Shikmer is Kedegen and Mishkunis.
Right.
Says everything.
Right, so he's being Mako. What?
He's Mako.
He can cut
you
more.
Have to cut more.
Right, well, I'm sorry. He's being Machmer for whom? I'm sorry. Well, maybe we're not disagreeing. Maybe we're just coming from two different perspectives.
Machmer for the one who owns the tree.
Okay, fine. So we're saying the same thing. We're just coming from two different perspectives. I'm talking about from the person who's cutting, who's doing the cutting. Okay. All right, anyway. But you're right, though. In other words, that's a good point of clarification. Right, for one person it's Machmer, for the other person it's Mako. Okay, fine. So, Ama Rav Ashi Masisa Namideka. And Rav Ashi says, and I'll tell you what, if you look back at the Mishnah and you read the Mishnah again, and just slightly more carefully, you're going to see this actually in the Mishnah. Diktani Kol Ilan Srak, because what's the wording of Abishol? Kol Ilan Srak again. The word kol is obviously a ribui. Iyamar Bishlama Resha Kai Haina Diktani Kol Ilan. So if he's going back on the Resha, where the Tanakhama says you can only cut some trees back to the plumb line, and Abishol says you can cut every tree back to the plumb line, every Ilan Srak back to the plumb line, so good. So then you understand the word, because kol is litfuye. It's additional. But Eli Amar Dasefa Kai, but if he, what he was doing was rather minimizing Ilan Srak mi Bayalei. So Allah Shmamina Resha Kai Shmamina. The fact that he says kol is coming to teach us that he is actually coming to be Marbe. It's an inclusionary term in Abishol, therefore allows one to go back all the way to the plumb line, as long as it's a non-fruit bearing tree. Ilan Shu no till the Rishus Arabim. Now, one last Mishnah, one last point this Mishnah makes in this Perek, and that is, what if the tree now's growth is going into the Rishus HaRabim? So what can you do with the branches there? Kotzitz Kedei Shehei Gamal Over V'Rechvo. So again, the basic idea is that you need room to maneuver. So basically, cut off enough so that the camel can go together with the rider riding on top of the camel. Okay, so that's your basic room to maneuver within the Rishus HaRabim. Right, sometimes you drive around the streets down here. We have a lot of growth down here in South Florida. So you see, like, they cut enough of the tree so that a truck can go under. So basically, that's the idea. Rav Yehuda Omer, Gamal Ton Pishtan. Oh, Chavil is Mos. Now, Rav Yehuda says the camel is going to be laden with flax or with some sort of vines. In other words, it's you have to picture and make room for the camel to move through while the camel has a load. Rabbi Shimon Amar Kol Ilan Kedeged Mishklos Mimnei Atuma. Rabbi Shimon says that you can cut back the entire tree. Cut back the entire tree so that there is no canopy whatsoever over the Rishus HaRabim, and the reason is as a result of Tuma. Now, I'm going to hold back from explaining what this means. You probably can guess what this means if you know a little bit of Tumah Tahara, specifically Tumas Mace. But right now, for our purposes, let's hold back, because I know the Gemara is going to discuss this point, and the Gemara is coming up in just a moment. But in the meantime, however, the Gemara over here has a conceptual discussion, and that is the following. Mantana de Benizakin, Basar Umdana de Hasha Azlina. Look, we're obviously trying to prevent nezek. We're trying to prevent damage. What is happening in the Mishnah is that there's growth growing into the Rishus HaRabim, and basically it's an accident waiting to happen. Someone's going to run right into the branch. So what you can do is you can cut back the branch, but you can only cut back the branch so there's enough room for people to negotiate through. Meaning, can we just forecast a little bit into the future? It's not so hard. Meaning, the tree's going to grow again. And the tree's going to grow again, and you're going to just face the problem one more time. But clearly, what the Mishnah is mandating is that we take the care of the problem just for the here and just for the now. And we don't forecast into the future. Because if all we're doing is just cutting back on the branches to create a clearing so that the camel can get through, and the camel with the driver, or the camel with the load, whichever position you're going to take, clearly what's going to happen is that a month from now, 2 months from now, it's going to grow back. You want to really take care of the problem, you cut the tree down. Or you... However, in other words, just let's forecast a little bit into the future. And clearly the Mishnah is not. And therefore, what the Mishnah is really telling us is, as far as Nezik is concerned, you only need to concern yourself with a current situation. And that's the Gemara's point. Mantan diminizakim basar umdana da hashta azlinan. Who goes after the current situation? Amar Yish Lakish b'machlokish nui v'rabbi Eliezer yididnan. So Reish Lakish points out that this is Machlokish Shnuya, meaning this is another debate, literally an old debate, and And this is the sheet of Rabbi Eliezer. The Gemara says, let's introduce ourselves to a Mishnah. One is not allowed to make a tunnel underneath the Rishos Harabim. You're not allowed to make a pit. A Siach Ma'aros, different types of underground caverns. Rabbi Eliezer Matir, and Rabbi Eliezer says that it would be permissible. Basically, if you took the Mishnah seriously and you took the Tanakhama's position seriously, there would no longer be a subway system in any major city. You can't dig a hole underneath the Rishos Harabim. That is the sheet of the Tanakhama. Rabbi Eliezer says you're allowed to do so. Rabbi Elazar Matir b'chdeshite agala malachis teuna avanim, assuming that it can burden a certain weight, meaning as long as it can manage the kind of weight that goes over it, so then there would be no problem, according to the sheet of Rabbi Eliezer. Now again, what's going on over here is basically the following. From Rabbi Eliezer's standpoint, right now we're good, meaning of course infrastructure deteriorates over the course of time. We know that. We understand that. But right now, as long as you are going to fortify the hole underneath the Rishos Harabim so that it can withstand the weight, you'll be fine. There'll be no problem. And yes, in the future, it's not going to sustain. That's true. But as I gauge it from this point going forward, and I don't necessarily have to forecast into the future. But on the other hand, the Chacham are of the position, no, that one has to forecast into the future. Meaning, right now it may be able to withstand the burden, but it can't last like this forever, and therefore you have to take the future into account, and therefore the Chachamim say, don't dig the hole whatsoever. So the Gemara now translates that same machlokus over here. Now again, we don't have a machlokus in our Mishnah, but if we're going to assign a position to the Mishnah, presumably that's Rabbi Eliezer, who says that I only need to cut back on the branches enough so that people can get through. Camels and its driver can get through. Why not forecast a little bit into the future? The tree's just going to grow back again. So again, what Reish Lakish is doing is aligning the sheet of Rabbi Eliezer regarding digging ditches underneath the Rosh Hashanah to our Mishnah about cutting back the branches. Rav Yochanan does not necessarily agree. Rav Yochanan Amar, Afilu Tem Rabbanan. Nope, you don't have to do that. You don't have to pigeonhole our Mishnah to the Shita of Rabbi Eliezer. Meaning, we could have the machlokes between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim vis-a-vis a pit underneath the ground, and meanwhile, we could have our Mishnah going according to everyone. Hasan Zimna Dimif Chesvalava Daite. Because consider, when you have a pit that's dug under the ground, so right now it can handle the weight. But again, it's infrastructure, and it is going to deteriorate. And basically, what the Chachamim's argument over there is that deterioration is not noticeable. Meaning, we're talking about the pit that's underneath the ground. So the inspector is going to have to come and go into the hole and survey it from underneath. And that's not going to happen that often. And it's just simply not detectable. But over here, we're talking about a tree that's going to the Rishos Harabim. It's obvious when the tree needs a trimming. So it could be that the Chachamim would be fine with our Mishnah over here, being that when the growth does come in, we're not worried about it because it will be so obvious and evident that the tree needs a trimming. So Rav Yochanan says, we don't have to relegate our Mishnah just to the position of Rabbi Eliezer. Continuing in the Gemara, Rav Yehuda Amar Galtam Pishtan, O Chavili Zemuros Yibayelahu, Shir de Rav Yehuda Nafish, O Dema Shir de Rabbana Nafish. We have two opinions in the Mishnah regarding how much you have to cut back as the branches are going into the Rishos Harabim. Either it's going to be the camel with the rider on top, or the second opinion of the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda, is it's going to be a camel with a load. Which one is necessarily bigger? So pshita d'shira d'rabbanan nafish, d'isa k'dach shira d'rabbi Yehuda nafish. So the Gemara says, I think the Chachamim is a greater shira, because if you subscribe to the shira Rabbi Yehuda, rabbanan b'shira d'rabbi Yehuda, hechi avdi. What exactly would the Chachamim do with the shira of Rabbi Yehuda? So the Gemara says, okay, but that argument in of itself is not sufficient. Ve'alamai, shira d'rabbanan nafish, Rabbi Yehuda b'shira d'rabbanan my avid. So what is Rabbi Yehuda going to be doing with the shira of the Chachamim? Meaning, they don't necessarily agree with one another. So the Gemara says, so how could I subscribe to Rav Yehuda and not be concerned about what the Chachamim are concerned with? But the Gemara says, I'll tell you how. Asher degachin v'chalef tusei. The Gemara says, because you could be Rav Yehuda. Now remember, Rav Yehuda says you have to count for the load. The load means that it's going to be wider. So that has to be more of a clearing on the sides. As far as the height is concerned, so it could be that what Rav Yehuda would say to the Chachamim is, you're riding on the camel, you could duck. and so maybe Rav Yehuda would require more of a clearing in terms of width, but not as much as the height as the Chachamim. Okay. And finally, last discussion in this parak, Rabbi Shimon Amar kol ilan keneged mishklos memnei atuma. Rabbi Shimon says that you have to clear any growth that grows on top of the rishas rabim as a result of tuma. Now, what does that mean? So again, we probably all have our guess. Tana, the Gemara quotes a brisa memnei oel hatuma. So the brisa says that has to do with tumas oel, or the brisa's formulation oel hatuma, which means as follows that. In the Rishus HaRabim, let's say there is a human remains, Kezayis Menemeis. So if there was a tree growing and it created a canopy, so we all know the halacha is that the Tumah is going to go up, as Tumas Meis is going to do. It's going to hit the canopy over the top, spread over the entirety of the canopy, drop back down again, and anyone now that's going underneath any one of the branches is going to be Tumah. And so therefore, in order to make the Rishus HaRabim a Tumah-free environment, so therefore, according to Rabbi Shimon of our Mishnah, any growth that grows over the Rosh Hashanah is going to be cleared back in its entirety. That's the Pshat in the Mishnah. That's what the Mishnah meant when the Mishnah said the word Tumah. Truth of the matter is, even before we saw the Braisa, that's probably what we all thought the Mishnah meant. At least that's what I thought. And the Gemara says, Pshita, Mibnei Atumatanan. And that's exactly what bothers the Gemara. Meaning, when you read the Mishnah, did you read the Mishnah any other way? What did the Braisa add to our discussion over here that we didn't already know back from the Mishnah? So the Gemara says, So the Gemara says no. If all I had was the Mishnah only introduced one word into this discussion, that's the word Tumah. I might have thought the following. Here's the concern. Concern is not that there's a mace, there's human remains actually on the ground, but maybe what happened is that the raven found some human remains, picked it up, and placed it on top of the branch. Now, what happens then is that when you have human remains on top, so the tumah goes in two directions. It goes up and it also goes down as well. And what then is going to happen is that anyone who's walking directly underneath the mace, underneath the human remains, is going to become tumah. And so therefore, if that was the pshat in the Mishnah, meaning that's, again, not... That is not the Pshat in the Mishnah. We know that because of the Braisa. But if that were the Pshat in the Mishnah, so then, Visagye, continue reading the Gemara, Visagye b'dechalule ba'alma. So now, how do I rectify the situation? You see, because if that were the concern, then all I would need to do is just basically, not trim the tree, but basically thin it out. In other words, basically cut every other branch so that nothing can get stuck in the branches. No raven can come and deposit human remains that will actually be left on top of the branches. If that were the pshat and that was the concern of the Mishnah. What the Bryce is clarifying is, no, that's not the concern. The concern is Thomas Mays coming from the ground, the tumah going up, hitting the branches, and creating a canopy of Thomas Mays that drops down. That's what the Braisa is clarifying for us. So Kamash Malan, that's the Chiddush of the Braisa in terms of a clarification of the Mishnah. Hajon Lach Lo Yachbor, and that is the end of the second parak of the Masechta. This morning we have the pleasure of starting the third parak of Baba Basra. Very popular parak. It's in the yeshivas when they're learning Baba Basra. So traditionally, this is the parak that is learned. Talks about ownership, kinyan, property. Classic discussions in Lamdus. Please, everyone, get comfortable. We're going to be in this parak for some time. The parak goes to Daf Samach Aleph. So that is over 30 blot of Gemara on this parak. Okay, it's not going to be. It's not going to be as much Gemara as you would think. The Dapim tend to be a little bit shorter. We'll talk more about that. And we're also going to be talking later on about the transition from Rashi to the Rashbam. We'll talk more about that later on as well. In the meantime, however, let's start the third parak. We're talking now about Chazaka as we start Cheska Sabatim. Just a quick introduction. We all know this, but it's important to just go over. We talk about acquisition. So the first thing we need to remind ourselves is the Mishnah Kedushin. The Mishnah Kedushin tells us that when we're talking about the acquisition of property, so there are three ways to acquire property. So Kesef, Shtar, Uvi, Chazaka. So I can acquire property either by giving money, or by shtar documentation, or by chazaka. Chazaka over there in the Mishnah Kedushin refers to a proprietary act, meaning that if I do something which shows that I am the owner of the property, meaning I plow the field or do any other action point which clearly demonstrates that I am the owner of the property, so that is a way of acquiring a property. Now, the Mishnah Kedushin is talking about where there is a very clear buyer and seller, and all we're doing is looking to just simply transfer title from one person to another person. The Mishnah Kedushin is very, very specific in terms of we are making a kinyan, we are going to make an acquisition, and it's just simply a question of how we're going to do it. Okay. That's the Mishnah Kedushin. Now, we're going to be using the word chazaka over here, but let's not get confused. The word chazaka over here in this third perek is not the same as the Mishnah Kedushin. The word chazaka over here is that you will become a de facto owner of a property because you've been on this property for some time. And as a result of that, you now become the de facto owner. Now, the previous owner may come along and say, what are you doing? And you're going to make an argument and say, what do you mean? I'm here. I've been here for some time already. I have a chazaka to this property. The word chazaka over here, although it's the same terminology, is not the same as in the Mishnah Kedushin. In the Mishnah Kedushin, we are making a kinyan. We are transferring the property, and it's just a question of how to do it. Here, chazaka is going to be used in the sense of, I've been here for some time already, it therefore de facto belongs to me. So it's a, yes, it's true that this Mishnah is dealing with how to acquire property, but it's not the same formal kinyan as discussed in the Mishnah in Kiddushin. This is going to be just simply a de facto acquisition based on, I've been here for some time. You'll notice I have not mentioned the number yet. The number is coming up, but you'll see that, however, in the Mishnah itself, the number is not an absolute number, as we'll see as we go through the Mishnah. Okay, the basic idea over here in this parak, and again, just continuing with just a very short introduction, the basic idea of this parak is as follows. As I pointed out just a moment ago, how do I acquire property? Either kesef shtar v'chazaka, either by money, by documentation, or by chazaka. Even after that's done, even if I'm not going to acquire the property through shtar, there's still going to be a title that's written up, meaning what we're going to do is we're going to write some sort of documentation saying that I'm the owner of the property, so that in the event that anyone comes over to me and questions the validity to my ownership of this property, I'm just simply going to procure the document and say, what do you mean? It belongs to me. Here's the documentation. Here's the title that says I, in fact, own the property. Now, how long are you expected to hold on to that documentation? So I pointed out a number of times. So the IRS expects us to hold on to our documents for 7 years. The Chachamim are not that rigid, and they're not that demanding. They expect us to hold on to documentation for about 3 years. After that, they're not expecting us to hold on to documentation anymore, which means now that if after 3 years have come and gone and somebody comes over to me and says to me, are you really the owner of this property? And I'll say yes. And then you'll say, where's your documentation? So it is reasonable to say, I no longer have it. Meaning, I had it when I bought it, I held on to it, but now as I'm going through my files, I'm going through my folders, I don't know where it is. So it is that's a reasonable position to take, that you don't have documentation after 3 years, and so therefore, absence of documentation does not necessarily question your ownership of the property. Now, that's the basic idea that revolves around our perek. And therefore, if you've been sitting on a property for, now let's say it, 3 years, and you have now no longer any documentation, and somebody comes over to you and says to you, are you really the owner? So now you can make a claim and say, yes, I'm really the owner. I purchased it some time ago, and I no longer have documentation. And this is the chazaka that we'll be talking about over the course of this parak, and for just terminology purposes, we'll say it's cheskes gimel shanim, the chazaka of living on the land for 3 years. With that stated, let's begin the first Mishnah of the third parak of Baba Basra. Cheskes abatim v'aboros v'ashichim v'amaoros v'ashochavos v'hamerchatzos v'beis abadim v'beis ashlachim v'ha'avadim. So, in order to create this cheskes gimel shanim, this this reasonable assumption that after living on a land for 3 years, the land becomes yours on houses, barusich and ma'aros, different types of pits in the ground, shochvos and mechatzos, the bathhouses, and olive press, and beis hashlachim are fields that need irrigation. And Avadim. Now, Avadim gets stuck in here because, as we always discuss, properties, and Eved is always going to get stuck in and lumped together with property. Meaning, obviously, an Eved is a person, it's a human being. But in terms of Kinyanim, in terms of acquisition, so Eved takes on the same property, pun intended, Eved takes on the same property as Karka. And so, therefore, the same ways that you acquire our Karka are the same ways that you acquire Eved, Avadim. That we learn back in Kiddushin, and because Avadim are linked together with Karka in terms of Kinyanim, in terms of the classic Kinyanim of Kesar, Shtar, and Chazaka back in Kiddushin, so too, they will also be, the Cheskes Kemoshanim would be a way of acquiring an Eved Kanani as well. Tadir, and anything which continuously produces fruit, cheskasam gimoshanim. So the chazaka goes for 3 years, meaning you will have a de facto chazaka on them after sitting on them for 3 years, miyom liyom, day to day. Meaning, when does the 3 year calendar start? It starts from the day that you first occupy the land. And then from there, you're going to go 3 years forward. And from that point going forward now, you become the de facto owner. Look at the first Rashi on the Mishnah. And he writes, Beis HaShlachim mitoch shehamayam b'socho shemashken oso mimenu tadir ose peres tadir. So the Beis HaShlachim, the property of the Beis HaShlachim, is that it continuously produces fruit. Since it has its own internal water source, so therefore it is generating its own water source, therefore constantly generating its own fruit. V'chol davar she'oseh peres tadir cheskasam gimel shanim miyom liyom im hichzik ba shalosh shanim shlemos. As long as you're holding on to these properties for 3 full years, ain't sarach lahavi shtar mechira. In terms of the bill of sale, it is not necessary for you to offer it, to show it, in order to prove that you own it. V'im iru alah ba'alim rishonim v'zeh omer mechati li v'avet shtari. So let's say somebody contests your ownership of the land after the 3 years, and you say, "What are you talking about? I purchased the land and I lost my shtar." Cheskasam mo'elas lo. So now your chazaka is going to help you. V'im lav in cheskasam mo'elas lo. Lefisha chesham gemoshanim lechazaka kol arei latzeis mimenu begemoshanim amru. Okay. So, they gave you this statute in which you are now allowed to argue that because I've been here for 3 years, so therefore I am the de facto owner of the land. Now you'll notice in Rashi, and this will become even clearer as we go through the Gemara, what becomes evident is that your right to claim that I own this land because I've been here the last 3 years, that in of itself is insufficient just to simply say I've been here for 3 years, but rather what you also have to add is a plausible explanation as to why the land is yours. Like Rashi, for example, said, I bought it. Meaning, and what is that called? We're going to, again, just new terminology for our parak, that's called a taina. It's called a claim. Meaning that you have to have a very simple and plausible explanation as to why you're the owner. So you could also say I inherited. You could also say it was gifted to me. But there must be some sort of explanation in terms of why you are the owner. It's what's called the taina. Just to simply say I've been here for 3 years is insufficient. Even if it's true, and even if it's been validated that you've been here for 3 years, that is going to be insufficient. What you need is a taina. You need a legitimate explanation in terms of why you were here. Continuing in the Mishnah, Sadeh Baal. Now, as far as the Sadeh Baal is concerned, so Sadeh Baal is a land where it's so fertile and the rain is so plentiful that it's able to produce just simply on the rain by itself, and it does not have its own internal water source. So Sadeh Baal cheskasu gimoshanim ve'ena miyam liyam. So the Sadeh Baal so also has a 3 year chazaka, so that you have to occupy the land now for 3 years, but here the 3 years can be, so to say, truncated. How so? Rabbi Shmuel Amar Gimel Chadashim Birishona Gimel Ba'achrona V'Shnayim V'Shneim Asar Chodesh Be'emsa. So Rabbi Shmuel says it's going to be 3 months of year number one, the full year number two, 3 months of the following year of year number three, giving us a total of 18 months. Tosfos points out over here, we know how to count. We could put together the numbers in order to come to the number 18 months. Why did the Mishnah specifically say 18 months? Tosfos asked that question.
What's the point of reference, though? What's the?
Is that related to the rainy season?
Okay, so just give me a moment. So Rabbi Kiva Omer Chodesh Bereishon veChodesh Be'achron of Yud Beis Chodesh Be'emsa. Rabbi Kiva says that again, the same idea. By stay ba'al, when it comes to a land that can be irrigated by rain. So Rabbi Kiva also has 3 years, but again, years one and three are going to be truncated, and to the point where you can even have 1 month as year number one, 1 month of year number three, together with the 12 middle months, giving us 14 months. Okay. Look at Rashi. Stay based above. Rashi writes regarding these truncated years. Hamestapek is b'me'ag shanim. So for these fields, it's going to be sufficient with rainwater. So eina osa peros ela pam achas b'shana. Now, because we are not having basically a continual water source, but we're basically working with the rain, and we're therefore going really seasonally. It is not just simply a subject of whenever I want, I could just simply plant and it's going to grow. But really, I'm following the seasons. So Rashi points out over here in terms of what exactly are these 3 months, meaning right now we're explaining the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel. So what exactly are these 3 months? So what you could do is basically you can get in a quick crop in 3 months. So what you can do is you can plant and harvest within the short 3 month window opportunity. So that gets you to year one. Here, Rashi explains as follows. You see, when it comes to a stay habal, so there, you can generate produce anytime you want, because you have the built-in water source. But once it's seasonal, and once you're counting on the season, so obviously the crop now becomes extraordinarily significant. Now again, according to Rabbi Shmuel, you can manufacture a crop, not manufacture, but you can produce a crop in 3 months' time. But that's really the only time this year you're going to do so. So it becomes extraordinarily significant. Therefore, as Rashi explains our Mishnah, you see, according to Rabbi Shmuel, if there was a quote-unquote a real owner, and you're not the real owner, and you're just squatting on the land, and you're just raising crop on this land. If, let's say, crop number one goes, and crop number two goes, and the crop number three comes and goes, so at that point in time, it is almost impossible to imagine that the original owner is watching you do that, and he's not going to say anything. So therefore, when the field is connected to the rain, and that means that the crop, the annual crop now becomes such a significant moment, so therefore, he's not going to watch you, meaning the original owner, if in fact he's the real owner, he's not going to watch you do that three times over and say nothing. So by virtue of the fact that you've got now 3 seasons where you have raised crop on this land and no one's contested you being here, so that is now going to be sufficient grounds to say you have cheskas gimel shanim. What Rabbi Akiva is doing in terms of reducing that 3 month period to a 1 month period, so Rashi says, stay tuned, we're going to be discussing that in the Gemara.
But even according to Rishmak, the rainy season is actually at the first 3 months, and then it starts at the beginning of the last 3 months.
Right. So again, you have to. I don't know enough agriculture to understand how the first 3 months of year one and the which is at the opposite end of the 3 months of year number three. I do get your question. I just don't have enough agricultural information to answer you like intelligently. But I hear the question. Okay, Amar Rabbi Yishmael. So back to the Mishnah, Rabbi Shmuel says, "Bemedvar mamurim b'stei lavan." That's talking about a white field. White field is wheat, right? When you look at the wheat field, so I know in the anthem it's called "Amber Waves of Gray," but the Mishnah describes it as white. So bemedvar mamurim b'stei lavan, avav b'stei ilan. So, but when it comes to stei ilan, a field of trees, kanas is tvuaso, masak is zesav, kanas ketso, harei elu gimoshanim. So there, you bring in tvua. Now tvua over here obviously is not referring to grain, because we're making the contrast between grain and trees. Tvua over here is a reference to grapes, and you bring in the grapes, you bring in the olives, and you bring in the figs, and you're going to get gimel shanim, you're going to get 3 years. Meaning basically, as long as you do three harvests,
even in one year,
so you're going to get two cheskas gimel shanim. And again, stay tuned. We're going to be discussing this also later on in the Gemara as well. Okay. Amar of Yochanan, Shamati Mehoche Usha, Shahayu Omer, Minayin Lechazaka Gimoshanim. And so the Gemara's first discussion, which is the classic discussion and reason why this the beginning of this paragraph is so popular in the yeshivas, is basically, what's the source? We now have this idea that as long as I occupy land for 3 years and it goes unchallenged, then I have a taina. And again, we don't really know that information as of yet. That's coming up later on. But, I mean, we don't know that from the Mishnah. But if I've gone unchallenged, if I've occupied a land unchallenged for 3 years and I have a taina, so then I become now the de facto owner. And where does this number 3 come from? How do I know that three is a significant number? Just as a interesting technical point over here, Rav Yochanan speaking to Hoche Usha. Who are Hoche Usha? So again, I turn to Rashi. Rashi says, Shagalta Sanhedrin Usha, Kedamin Brosh Hashanah. So we know that the Sanhedrin after Churban Beis HaMikdash was sent into exile, and it went through 10 stops. The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah goes through all 10 stops. Esther Galios Galta Sanhedrin, Yavne LeUsha. So one of the stops is Yavne, and after Yavne, they stopped in the town of Usha. You're going to see a number of Gemaras that say, Hitkinu B'Usha, they instituted an Usha, meaning that in the town of Usha, where Sanhedrin was, so legislation was still being done by the Sanhedrin. So As a technical historical point, so this is taking Rav Yochanan and really backing him up historically, meaning Rav Yochanan is after Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, meaning he's one of the early Moraim of Eretz Yisrael, but comes significantly after, presumably comes well after the Galus of Sanhedrin to Usha. I'm just theorizing. It's just speculation on my part that this may not be the Rav Yochanan who is classically Rav Yochanan, but that's a guess. Either way, it's a minor point in this Gemara's discussion. Either way, so how do I know that Chazaka is Gimel Shanim, that a Chazaka operates after that your Kinyan kicks in after 3 years? So the Gemara says, so we're going to try now first with our first model, meaning basically we're going to take a look at a model in the Torah of Chazaka. And we're going to take that model and apply it over here. So where do we have the model of Chazaka? So you probably guessed that this is the direction we're going. And we're headed to the direction of Shura Muad. So we're now looking at Shura Muad. So again, let's go back to Baba Kama. And let's refresh everything that we already know. But let's review. When I have a shore, when I have an ox, so it's not typical for a shore, for an ox, to put its head down and to gore another animal or to gore another human being. It's unusual behavior. And so if my ox does it one time, if it does it a second time, if it does it a third time, so I'm going to be liable for the damages that are incurred, because I'm responsible for any damage that's done by me or by my property. However, since it's unusual behavior, so therefore the Torah does not require me to pay nezek shalem. I don't have to pay full damages. I only need to pay chatzi nezek. I only have to pay for half damages of that which it does. And just one other point, to go back to Baba Kama, I don't even have to pay chatzi nezek full damages. I am capped in terms of how much I have to pay. I only have to pay migufo, based on the value of my ox. So whatever my ox is, that is the cap of how much I have to pay in terms of damages. So it's chazin as a capped at the value of my ox. Okay. But anyway, That's the story if my ox did it once, twice, or three times. On the fourth time, however, if my ox now has put down his head and gored another person or another other people's property, I now have to pay nezek shalem. So when it goes now from the third time to the fourth time, so now the status of the animal has changed. The animal now is no longer considered a tam; it is now considered a muad, and that's because obviously we've created. Well, we didn't do anything, but the animal has now shown a propensity that this is what it does, and so therefore its status changes. So what do you see regarding shura muad? You see that after three times we have a status change. So what the Gemara now is trying to do is take that model and apply it over here. After 3 years of living on a property, there has now been a status change. I now become the owner of that property. I previously was not the owner of the property. I now become the owner of the property. Okay. Much to contemplate in terms of this comparison between the halachas of Shura Muad and our discussion of Cheskes Gimel Shanim.
And the, can we use the unit instead of a year? We can say a month. Why a year? A month is also a year.
Right. Very good. Okay, and the Gemara is going to... Right. All right. We still have a lot more Gemara to do, but yes. It's already that's an excellent question.
How can you use movable to cart?
Right. In other words, again, it's a conceptual discussion. Meaning, you're right. As far as comparing an animal and damages from an animal to the acquisition of property, they really are two different areas, both having to do with money, but they're two different areas. But basically, conceptualization, the idea of status change. So the Gemara is taking that concept of status change and applying it over here. So the Gemara says, "Mashur hamuad kevin shenagach gimel negichos." So as far as the shur hamuad, so once it is gored three times, nafik le mecheskas tam vekamle becheskas muad. So has now left cheskas tam. It's no longer status wise a shur tam, but now it's a shur muad. Hachenami kevin de achla tlashnin nafik le mereshus mocher vekaim ala bereshus lokeach. So now after eating on the land, eating over here, meaning working the land, harvesting the land, and three consecutive years, so now the land has now moved status-wise from Rishus Mocher, from the seller, to Rishus Lokeach, to the buyer. So the Gemara says, okay, so that is now our first attempt, and it will take us through the rest of today's daf, in terms of whether or not this comparison and the usage of the idea of Cheska Shor Hamuad is going to be a fair application to our halacha of Cheskes Gimel Shanim. So the Gemara says, first off, let's start off with a very technical point, but it's an important technical point. Let's start off with the Shura Muad. Okay, what happens? It gores once, still tam. Gores a second time, still tam. Gores a third time. Now, on that third time that it gores, I'm still only going to have to pay half damages. Only when it gores the fourth time, then and only then, am I now going to have to pay Nezek Shalem. So the truth of the matter is that we don't see the status change until the fourth time that it gores. Now, let's talk about our halacha. When do you become the owner? At the conclusion of the third year. So we're off by a year, really, if we're trying to compare Shura Muad to Cheskes Gimel Shanim. So hachi hashta. So the Gemara says, no. The truth of the matter is it is a technical problem, but it's really not the question really doesn't get off the ground. The Gemara says, look, as far as the animal is concerned and its change of status, really, after the third goring, it has now changed status. Now, it happens to be that for the third goring, you're still only going to have to pay chatzi nezek. Because it's at the third time, now status changes. Now, but you're not going to see the effects of the status change until the fourth time. But the truth of the matter is that after three... Right, exactly. But after the third time now, even though on the third time you're only going to be paying chatzi nezek, but now the status changed. Ve'idach kilo nagach ma'ila shalem. You see, you don't see that status change because you're not going to be held responsible, liable for that status change until it gores again. But really, status has changed. So the Gemara says, "Hacha kevin de achla tlashni kaima lebrushusei." Over here, we're talking about change of ownership. So you see, I know you don't really see it, but the effects of that status change will occur the moment that 3 years have come and gone. So the Gemara says, so truth of the matter is, just from a number standpoint, it really is oranges and oranges. It's not apples and oranges. They really both have 3 times, and the status changes after the third time. Just happens to be that with the shore, you don't see that until the fourth time. Here by the property, the ownership now transfers after 3 complete years. So it's really the same from that standpoint. We're on the top of Chav Ches Amud Beis. We are 3 lines down. So again, if our model for Cheskes Gimel Shanim is going to be based on Shura Muad, so if I have a Chazaka with no Taina, so therefore it should be a Chazaka. As I explained in the introduction, in order for Cheskes Gimel Shanim to work, in order for you to become a de facto owner of a property by living on the property for 3 years, so you need a Taina. Now, a Taina over here is just something, it's very simple. The Taina is where you just simply give a plausible explanation as to how you became the owner. Meaning, just to say I'm here is not enough. You have to say something like, I bought it, I inherited it, it was gifted to me. You need an explanation. But the Gemara says, if the model for status change is coming from shore, so then you shouldn't need a taina. So alama tana, meanwhile, the Mishnah says, kol chazaka sheini mataina ain't a chazaka. We're going to learn later on in the perek that a chazaka without a taina is simply not a chazaka. Cheskes Gimel Shanim simply does not work by you just being there for 3 years. There has to be some plausible explanation. Without the plausible explanation, there's simply the Cheskes Gimel Shanim does not change status. So the question now becomes, if Shur HaMuad is the base model in which we are learning the halacha, there's no taina by Shur HaMuad. You don't need a plausible explanation. Quite frankly, you're not going to get one in terms of why this ox has been goring 3 times. All you need is just simply the fact of the ox has gored now 3 times. And that's it. So where does the taina become part of this entire discussion? So the Gemara says as follows. So the Gemara says, well, why is it that 3 years takes us from the Marakama? Marakama, again, a term that we're going to be using time and again. Let's just get familiar. Marakama is the original owner, meaning either the real original owner or the alleged original owner, but the person who lays claim to the fact that he was the one who actually owned it, he owned it first. So, why is it that after 3 years, the land has left the Marakama and gone into your land? So, so it has to do with the fact that you say that it belongs to you, meaning, and on what grounds are you saying that belongs to you? Because you're saying, he sold it to me, he gifted it to me, etc., etc. So, but without that, in other words, we have no starting point for the chazaka to kick in. Meaning that we could still learn it all out from Shura Muad, by Shura Muad, so there's no taina. But you know why there's no taina? There doesn't need to be a taina. Meaning, we're looking for a pattern of behavior. We see that the ox now has gored 3 times. That's it. That's all you need. Over here, it's the same basic idea. We're looking for a status change, but there cannot even be the beginning of a discussion until you explain how it is that you've come now to be the owner of this property. So that's why you need a taina over here. So Maskefla Rav Avir Alamiata Machashla Bafanov Lotava Macha Dumi Dishur Muad. So the Gemara says, now let's ask another question. Now, as I explained in the introduction that we've now seen together in the Gemara, in order for you to exercise this method of Kinyan of Gimel Shanim, so you have to have a taina. Now, there's also something called a macha. Again, the first time we're hearing this term, and the idea behind a macha is basically a challenge or a protest. If over the course of the 3 years, the original owner challenges or protests, you're occupying the property, so that's going to be submitted, and therefore that will block your Cheskes Gimel Shanim, and you will no longer become the de facto owner. So the Gemara says, now, if the idea of Cheskes Gimel Shanim is basically platformed and modeled after the Shur Hamuad. So the Gemara says, if that's true, so then a machal would mean what? That a protest would have to come directly to you. Well, why should that be? Because we know that by Shur Hamuad, the information has to come to the owner of the animal. If the challenge didn't come directly to you, it shouldn't be a challenge, right? Do me the Shur Hamuad. Because we know that's true regarding Shur Hamuad. Ma Shur Hamuad b'fanav b'inam, av hachanami b'fanav b'inam. So the Gemara says, by Shur Hamuad we know that in order for the animal to change from being a Shur Tam to Shur Hamuad, we must have the owner being notified. The owner of the animal being notified. Now how do I know that? As we'll see in just a moment, it's a pasuk. V'hu ad bevalav. The owner himself has to be notified. So too over here, if we want to block you from becoming the owner, if we want to, if we want the marakama, or let's put it from his perspective, if he wants his ownership to continue and not to transfer over to the occupier, so you should have the macha coming directly from him to the current occupier. And meanwhile, as we're going to learn later on, not necessary. Meaning, in order for you to lodge an official protest or a challenge that he is not the owner, he's just an occupier, you simply have to submit it to Beis Din, or you could submit it to witnesses. You don't need to submit it directly to the occupier. So the Gemara says, but why not? So the Gemara says, Hasam, over there, be'ivuad bevalav ksiv. So the Gemara says, well, I'll tell you why. Because as it relates to Baba Kama, and as it relates to the Shur Hamuad, it's a pasuk in the Torah. V'huad bevalav. So in other words, in terms of notification, here's what I normally would safely assume. If there was a formal protest that was lodged in front of Beis Din, in front of witnesses, so the owner's going to find out. Just as a technicality, or let's put it in better terms, gzeiros hakasuv, that when it comes to the Shur Hamuad, the owner has to be told directly. However, over here, we don't have that requirement of v'huad bevalav. We just simply need the occupier to hear that the original owner is challenging and protesting his occupation. As a result of that, you don't need the formality of, I need to tell him directly. As long as he finds out, that's fine. And the Gemara over here says, Tzahacha, but over here, Chavrcha, Chavr Islay, V'chavr de Chavrcha, Chavr Islay. Gemara just has such a great expression, and that is, word gets around. If you lodge the formal protest, a challenge that the occupier is not the owner, and you've done that within the 3 years, and even though he didn't directly hear it, that will be sufficient grounds to block him from becoming the owner. Okay, so where do we stand so far on this discussion? Let's quickly recap. Let's quickly recap, and we'll pause here for today. So first of all, we finished the second parak of Baba Basra. We talked a couple more halachas about branches are going into your neighbor's property, branches going to the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, how much can you cut back? So a couple of details that we saw regarding that. Started this morning the third parak of Baba Basra. We talked about occupation in terms of becoming a de facto owner after living on the land for 3 years. We learned together in the Mishnah that as long as you've lived on the land uncontested for 3 years, you become a de facto owner. Now, in terms of why, so I explained why in the beginning of the parak, then we haven't really seen that inside yet. All that's coming up, all the explanations are coming up. But basically, when you live on the land for 3 years, the land now becomes yours. How come? Meaning, what is the significance of the number three? So right now, we're in the middle of the first suggestion of the Gemara, which is that this is based on the model of Shur Hamuad. Shur Hamuad, after 3 times, status changes, so that the animal goes from being Shur Tam to Shur Hamuad. Here, too, after 3 years, so status changes, it goes from the Mocher to the Lokeach. The Gemara is right now in the middle of really challenging this as the base model. What we learned together this morning is the idea of Taina, that in order to become the owner, you have to have a plausible explanation as to, in other words, in addition to being here 3 years, how did you end up becoming the owner? So you have to lay a claim to the fact that you bought it. In addition to that, also, we learned about Macha, that if the original owner wants to block you from becoming the owner so he can lodge a formal protest, as we also just learned together, that formal protest doesn't have to go directly to the occupier. It can go to Beis Din, it can go to Edim, with the assurance that word's going to get back to the occupier that you have formally challenged his occupancy and his resulting ownership if he were there for 3 years. So that's where we stand right now. We'll see tomorrow. The Gemara's got more discussion about trying to learn out Cheskes Gimel Shanim from Shura Muad, and we will take a different path tomorrow.